You're listening to a special podcast edition of Talkin' Ball. If you can't watch the show live, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or find it on the CSNW Twitter and Facebook pages after every show.
This video is brought to you by Toyota of Portland on Broadway.
Let's start with the ending of this thing, because the Blazers had a double-digit lead there in the fourth quarter, and all of a sudden, it might have even managed to sneak up on the broadcast crew, but this thing was in doubt there in the final moments.
You know, Dan, I had forgotten really what good shots the Sixers had to tie this game. They had three pretty much open shots. The last one is the only one I had remembered, the George McGinnis shot from the wing, and he pulled the string on that. He choked that shot. He left it way short, but there were two shots previous to that. One of them, Dr. J, missed a jumper from the foul line.
And then Lloyd Free had a good one, too.
That would have been a disaster had they hit one of those shots.
And yeah, who knows if they'd have won the game, Dan, in overtime.
Well, I wonder, too, at that point in time, if, say, a five-point lead or a seven-point lead was a much bigger advantage in the eyes of everybody watching than it is today. Today, a seven-point lead is gone in a flash. Back then, because of no three-point shot, maybe you felt like you had a bigger cushion.
Yeah, inside a minute, the Blazers are up by five, and Brent Musburger's talking like it's a done deal, and let's start celebrating. Well, no. 18 seconds to go. Rick Barry says, well, now this is still a game. They tie up Bobby Gross, get the tip, and as Dwight said, they make a shot, and they win. They send it in overtime.
It was different in those days. I remember a game against Chicago the next year where Portland scored 5 points in the last 13 seconds to win a game that it looked like they were going to lose. That was the biggest deal you never heard of. Wow, they got 5 points in the last 13 seconds. Well, the fact was, without a three-point field goal, that was a big deal to do it that quick. But, you know, today's game, that would be nothing. Teams do that kind of stuff all the time.
But the game was so much different, Dan, in those days. The offenses were more slashing to the basket. You look at the starting guards in this game six, Henry Bibby and Doug Collins for Philly, and Johnny Davis and Nolan Hollins. Neither of those guys were really long-distance shooters.
Right.
They were all guys who could go to the basket.
Yeah, no reward at all in those days for shooting 25-foot jumpers or 20-foot jumpers, 15-foot. The whole idea was get the ball as close to the basket as you could.
The other element, you talked about how the guards didn't have the same say in that day that they do today, but really the big men controlled this thing early on, and the way the foul trouble kept the Sixers at bay. Caldwell Jones with three personal fouls before the first quarter is even over. He had four fouls at halftime.
What coach leaves a starting center in the game with three fouls? I mean, Caldwell Jones is a pretty important guy, especially on the defensive end for him.
Caldwell Jones was terrific at that point of his career. Was great for the Blazers many years later as a backup center. But you can't let that happen. And Daryl Dawkins had been good for them in the backup role, but he was not good on this day. The game was a little too much for him.
The box score, built for business, brought to us by Comcast Business Class. Bob Gross leads the Blazers with 24 points. Dr. J leads all scorers with 40 points. 8 assists, 6 boards, and George McGinnis with 28 points and 16 boards. You could get a sense of just how special Dr. J was as a player by just watching that game and seeing Bob Gross, a very good defender back in the day, was having all kinds of problems.
He was overwhelmed. You know, Julius was 27 years old in the prime of his career athletically, averaged over 30 points in that series. And it wasn't just his scoring. I mean, he was such an incredibly dynamic player and a leader on that team. He was just incredible.
His dunks turned games around. They really did.
And it got sloppy, especially late for the Blazers, where they gave up that lead. When it was all said and done, the paper printed 27 turnovers for the Blazers, 21 for the Sixers in that game. They didn't dole out individual turnovers at that point in time, though, Kerry.
I know they didn't.
What's going on? You blaming the NBA or individual stat keepers? What's going on?
Let's point the finger on these guys. It'd be interesting to know which guys had 6-7 turnovers, right?
We'll go back and count it up. But there are certainly many differences, whether it's times in the game in which you had three shots to make two from the free throw line, two shots to make one, a different time in a different era, all the three-second violations in the paint to keep guys out of there, because that's where everyone made their money at that point in time in the NBA.
I've not seen anybody better all around than Bill Walton was that year. I've not seen anyone And again, I've been around for, you know, watching this game for over 40 years now.
That was Johnny Davis on the impact of Bill Walton on that 1977 title team for the Portland Trail Blazers. Walton in the Game 6 clincher, 20 points, 23 rebounds, 5 assists, 8 blocks, Dwight.
This is amazing. And you know, Bill likes to talk, and everybody knows that by now, I think. But he doesn't like to talk much about himself, believe it or not. I think he's uneasy about that. I sat down with him during their recent reunion in Portland and tried to get Bill Walton to talk about himself and what might have been.
Dwight, we won the game, and that's what I always played for, was to win.
I know, but you didn't get to play long enough.
Well, I tried my best, and yeah. I just wish I could have played more, wish I could have done more. The people of Oregon have always given me the greatest life ever, and I just wish I could have given more back.
Well, what you gave was plenty good enough. I don't know that people really realize how good you were, Bill. And I say that with all, I mean, I'm not trying to blow smoke, you know, I don't do that. I don't think they know, because they didn't get to see that window of opportunity that you had.
I was lucky. I was part of a great team, and that's what I wanted.
In college and in the pros.
What I really wanted was more. Yeah. And I had a chance, and I was part of three great, great teams, three of the greatest ever. UCLA, the records still stand to this day. Portland Trail Blazers, youngest team to ever win the championship to this day. And then the Boston Celtics, which was my boyhood dream team, you know. And so wouldn't it have been fantastic for me to just be able to be on one team the whole time? But that's not the way my life played out. And my job is to make the most and the best out of what is and what was. And that's what I tried to do. And to be here with the guys today, wow.
Bill Walton right there talking about it at the reunion. The year they won the title was just the third of his four total seasons in Portland. He played 65 games that season, would be the most games he'd ever play in a single season in a Blazer uniform. And that's the story of the Bill Walton NBA career. Played 10 years, missed three entire seasons, and many more games and seasons he played because of his various ailments.
Yeah, it was a shame, Dan. And I've always believed this, and I've had many people in the NBA tell me, when healthy, when he's playing at peak efficiency, Bill Walton was as good as any center who ever played the game. And you heard Johnny Davis say the same thing, basically.
He's a good scorer, but the thing I really liked about him, Dan, was his defense, and we saw some of that in these clips. He averaged 4 block shots in the championship series that year, led the Blazers with 7 assists in Game 6. Just such an overall selfless player, and he fit perfectly in Ramsey's offense, and was their defensive catalyst, too. I agree with Dwight. I think at the peak of his career, he's as good as anybody.
And if he gets healthy and stays healthy, do they rattle off 3-4 in a row? Do they win 5-6 titles over the span of a
decade?
Well,
the evidence was the next 50-10, those first 60 games, and then he gets hurt and a couple other guys hurt, and that was the end of it.
It was almost a Golden State kind of dominance the year after they won the championship. They were terrific. They were killing the league. They loved playing on the road. They were that team that would come into your building and spank you in front of your home fans. How many would they have won? It's only a matter of how many he would have been healthy for. If he's healthy for 5 years, they win 5.
The passing was a key and an element to where we didn't, you know, I wasn't quite around yet, almost. But at that point, had you seen many big men passing at all like him historically?
Wes Unseld was a very good passer. And you saw those half court, those long passes, very good.
Now by one of the members of that team, Bob Gross, former second-round pick of the Blazers back in 75, and the leading scorer in Game 6, the decisive game, also had the task of trying to slow down Dr. J. When Dr. Jack Ramsey gave you this assignment, what was your first reaction?
It was a team assignment. That was what was told to me. I just tried to stay in front of him and keep him away from the basket.
When you see Bill Walton in that moment in Game 3, specifically because the Sixers took those first two games, were you thinking the series was shifting there, or was that just one game?
The first game?
Well, no, Game 3, where we saw Bill Walton there, and you guys dropped the first two.
Yeah, we'd come home. We knew that we were a better team at home and that we didn't play very well first two games. We had quite a bit of time off in between our last game with the Lakers and that first playoff game, and I think we were a little stale the first couple games.
Bob, people watched the re-air of that game, And I think a lot of them had never seen Dr. J play, probably. What was the toughest thing about guarding him, other than maybe his ability to slam the ball down in your face?
Well, he was very fast, first of all, on, you know, running down the floor. He, to my benefit, he wasn't the greatest shooter, so I was able to stay off him a little bit. But he was an incredible artist with the ball when he was around the basket. He had the biggest hands of anybody I've ever seen, and could control the ball like nobody else around the basket, and he could jump. He was one of a kind.
But he had to contend with you in that series, Bob, and you averaged 11.2 in the regular season, but he had some big scoring games in the finals, including the last two games, 24 and 25. Was there something about their defense? What happened during that series?
Well, we had a game plan. We were going to try to make sure he wasn't fresh for the whole series, try to make him try to guard me. And so it was kind of nice that time of the season, the playoffs, they started running a few plays for me. They didn't normally run plays for me, but I got, on occasion a call to, you know, try to take him out and move him around under the basket and make him work hard so he's not as fresh towards the end of the game.
But your game was moving without the ball anyway, it seemed like, so it was a natural thing to make him chase you all over half court. Which, when you see the game, that's what you were doing the whole time. I mean, you had to take a lot out of him. I think he only got 40 in that game. So.
Yeah. Everybody tells me I did a great job.
Yeah, you held him to 40.
Well, an apple a day, a gross a day keeps the doctor away was one of the signs we saw in the crowd during that game. Was that your reputation? For those who weren't around back then, this is 40 years ago, and obviously there were a bunch of people watching here tonight that weren't around for it. What was the reputation for Bob Gross, specifically that season?
Oh, boy, I don't know. That was the first year I really got to play. That was my second year in the league. I hadn't played much the year before, so I don't know. I was... I probably didn't have a reputation as a shooter because I didn't shoot that often. I got most of my baskets around the hoop until that series. They asked me to do a little more. I don't know. You'd have to ask other people. I don't know how to judge myself.
Sure. Well, you did plenty of great things over the course of that series. And like we said, capped it off in game six by leading the Trailblazers with 24 points in the series finale. Can you stick around?
Sure.
I'm glad you said yes, because I have no idea what we'd do in the next segment if you'd have said no. So we appreciate you sticking around. Much more with Bob Gross straight ahead. Welcome back to this special edition of Talkin' Ball, commemorating the 40th anniversary of the Trailblazers championship. Bob Gross continues here with us. You know, the backcourt was an interesting situation there over the playoffs, the extent of the playoffs. Dave Twardzik goes down with an injury, and then Johnny Davis gets inserted into the starting lineup and seems to really excel and take that by the horns. What happened over the span of the playoffs, and what was his impact on the series?
Well, I don't know if you remember. I think that Jack initially wanted to bring Larry Steele into the starting lineup, play guard. I think it was Bill Walton. Of course, Jack never came to me for advice, but he asked Bill about his opinion, and he says, well, we need Johnny in there for speed and quickness and, you know, defense. And so those two together were quite a combo. They were very quick, very, very fast. Both could shoot the ball. Forced Philadelphia to use Caldwell Jones to bring the ball up the floor because they didn't want their guards attempting to dribble the ball down the floor with one of them guarding them.
The interesting thing about that is Johnny hardly played 10 minutes in the first series, and then in the second series played a little bit, and then after he got in the starting lineup, boom, he just played well. How can a guy turn it on like that with so little?
We watched him play every day in practice. We knew he could do it. He was good leaper for his size, decent to good shooter from outside, and had a good intellect for the game too. Knew where to be and ran the offense very well.
Bob, you mentioned Jack Ramsey, and my recollection of the time was that one of the storylines of the series was you guys were really well coached, that Jack did a great job, he was innovative, and that the Sixers weren't. And they weren't very well coached. They rolled the balls out, they played a lot of one-on-one. Did you have that feeling as a player in that series that you guys had a little more going for you on the bench than the other guys?
Well, looking back at it, I could say that. At the time, we heard the same stories that were going around where they wouldn't let the press in because they didn't want them to see how their practices were run. And there was no reason for us not to let the press in. Of course, today that would never happen. But I think we knew that we had one of the finest, if not the best, coaches. He was always prepared, and there was never... nothing that he didn't take care in account to in advance, so we were never surprised with what he was going to do for us, or at the end of the game, there was always something he had in his pocket.
Bob, I got to ask you, after that final whistle, you guys won the title. What were your emotions at that time?
It was quite a time, but I just remember trying to get off the floor before I was run over. I was pretty close to the aisle, so I got out pretty quick. I was one of the first guys off the floor, and then I've seen the video a million times since then with Bill and the rest of the guys, but I was extremely tired, worn down. A couple days after the series was over, I got sick like I'd never been sick before. You know, just my system was worn down, but it was quite a couple days there, that and the parade that followed.
Bob Gross, thank you so much for the time and sharing your memories here tonight.
You're welcome.
See you again in 10 years.
Let's hope so.
All right, very good. Well, the man who was on the TV call for the greatest moment in Portland Trailblazer history joins us right now, Brett Musburger, broadcasting legend. Thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it.
Glad to be with you, Dan. It's a great memory of mine, the Portland Trail Blazers championship. So many things went down in that series. It was a wonderful experience.
Well, let's talk about June 5th, 1977, specifically Game 6. What memories might come flooding back to you from that particular day, that particular broadcast?
What I personally am never, as in ever, going to forget is that we had this great scene in the middle of the floor. The Trailblazers celebrating the championship. Bill Walton had his shirt off, and I have to lead to go to the Kemper Open. In other words, we leave the greatest scene in the history of Portland sports to go to a golf tournament. I felt horrible, but there was nothing I could do about it because I was under orders. And that general manager, I still shake my head when I think about the order coming down from him to go right away. From a personal standpoint, I'm never going to forget, nor am I going to forgive how they handled that particular broadcast, because it was a terrific moment, and the Portland Trail Blazers and their fans deserved a much better conclusion than what we gave them that day, I'll tell you that.
Well, you likened during the broadcast that you were seeing unfold in Portland something to the beginnings of what could be the Packer dynasty in football, with Vince Lombardi rattling off 5 NFL titles in 7 years about a decade earlier. Did you get a sense that you were seeing this unfold in front of you, the beginnings of that, had Walton stayed healthy?
Yeah, you don't think at that time, because Walton is playing so well, you don't think that he's going to go down again with injuries and miss as much time as he would. So you think that because remember now, the 76ers had looked good in the first couple of games before we go out to Portland, and Jack Ramsey and the Trailblazers are able to turn it around and win the next four. So certainly you think that this could be the beginning of a dynasty out west with Portland. It's certainly not like the collection of talent, let's say the Golden State Warriors, have put together here. I mean, what Walton was able to do with Davis cutting, Torjic cutting, Gross cutting, and then the great rebounder in Lucas backing him up. And if they sloughed off Bill at all from that free throw line, he'd knock the shot down on you. And it was the great passing demonstration that we witnessed in that series on the comeback. And the one thing not to be overlooked with Bill Walton, yes, he was a great physical presence, but Bill Walton was one of the smartest players we've ever seen. I mean, he just knew how to carve up a defense. But now as I sit here and talk to you And I remember certain things unfolding from that series. And I can remember Maurice Lucas and Daryl Dawkins getting into it. And basically, Dawkins backing away from Lucas. And then Dawkins' brother is coming down the steps in Philadelphia to get into the fray. And Lucas goes, "You want a piece of me too?" And that stopped him right there. I mean, there was no enforcer quite like Lucas. And that has changed dramatically in the NBA.
Yeah.
You don't see players like Lucas around. If the league had players like Lucas, believe me, Durant would not be allowed to run openly to the rim and slam it down like he did back in game one against the Cavaliers, as you well remember. Mo would have taken care of that early.
A lot of people have just watched the entire broadcast before they hear you talk about it on this show. Can you take us inside? Do you remember specifically anything about that environment that could have stood out to Rick Barry or you in that moment?
Well, first of all, as you know, in the old arena, you know, it was very tight. The fans were very close to the table. So we could hear them. They would stand up next to us. And I don't think they ever let up, that crowd. From the beginning of the game to the end, the decibel level was simply off the charts, okay? And I several times had to ask the truck, you know, speak up a little bit louder because we're having difficulty hearing you out here at the table. So that Rick and I both felt the same way, and we'd been through a lot of championship series. Rick obviously had played in one recently, back in 75, I guess it was, when they swept away the Washington Bullets. So he'd been right in the middle of it. But we'd never experienced a crowd this enthusiastic. There wasn't, I can't remember anybody cheering for a 76er the entire course of that game, to tell you the truth. It was deafening in the building that day.
You commented a couple of times during the broadcast, not sure if you remember this, about all of the flashes inside the building, warning the viewer at home, don't be concerned or alarmed by all the extra flashes. There are a lot of cameras going off here. And you said there might be 3,000 extra people in the building with press credentials and cameras flashing. We're not sure what you meant. The people were sneaking in under the guise of being media members, or what that was alluding to?
Yeah, exactly. They were trying to get in any way they could. A couple of guys tried to get in through the door. They told me later, we're with the Portland Police Department, and they want a couple of plainclothes people to help out in case anything. You would try anything to get into the building to see that game. It was the number one sporting event in the history of the city, believe me. And so, yes, they came in. There were some fake press credentials. Listen, to tell you the truth, I probably snuck a couple of guys into that game, okay? They were standing off in the corner watching the game. They came in with me before we got started into the back where the trucks were parked back there, and our equipment was stored. So it was it was just a wonderful, wonderful scene.
Now, quickly before we let you go, you mentioned the bedlam that ensued, and you were ordered to rush this thing off the air and get to golf. Is there anything that we missed in particular, or that you remember about that scene that unfolded after the final buzzer that the broadcast may have missed that you still remember very vividly?
Well, I remember vividly that the celebration continued, and I sat there in silence, stunned silence for a while, because, you know, one of the first things you learn is that the camera gives that audience at home such a wonderful view of experiences such as that. No words that I'm going to say, and certainly after the fact, are going to be able to duplicate that. The joy of the people at home, the Trailblazer fans. Obviously, the 76ers, they've turned the set off. They're gone. I got it. But even if there's just a half dozen people that are so attached to that team, and they want to see themselves, they want to see the hugs with everybody, they want to see a live interview with Bill Walton, with the sweat dripping down the jersey off. They want to see Jack Ramsey. They want to. Nothing replicates live television. It's the beauty of that instantaneous picture. And everybody who was a Trailblazer fan was robbed of that. And absolutely no one felt worse about that than I did. And I would have done anything. But if I hadn't made the throw, they were going to yank it from me anyway. I mean, that's the nature of the beast.
Right.
I'm not in control of the technology at the time. And it's a shame. Yes, the game is still there. The memories are there. The immediate aftermath with Walton, you can see that. But that should have gone on far longer than it did. And for those fans in Portland who still blame me for that, I'm really sorry. It should have been handled differently at the end.
Well, Brent Musburger, it's been a great honor and a privilege. Thank you so much for taking the time with us. We really appreciate it.
You got it. Thank you.
Celebration and the parade that ensued just one day later, and this information infused by Eastside Distilling. Efficiency. Dave Twardzik above everybody else in the NBA that season for the Portland Trailblazers. 69% true shooter, which combines two-point shooting. There were no three-point shots quite yet for another 3 years. And free throw shooting. Nobody combined it better, was more efficient from the field that year. Not even Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And Dave Twardzik joins us now from his home in Virginia. Dave, how do you explain crushing Kareem like that, as we showed in that graphic right there?
Well, you have to know your limitations. I knew I wasn't a very good shooter from the outside, so I drove a lot and tried to shoot a lot of layups.
That's a good explanation. And also maybe explains your nickname of Pinball from back in the day. Who gave you that nickname?
Well, you know, I've never forgiven Bill Shanley for that. That's the way he used to describe my game. And whenever I see Shans, I turn an icy shoulder to him because of that nickname.
Take us back to 1977, Game 6, and what sticks out in your mind over the course of that game, before the game, after the game? What's the first thing that comes?
Philly's just going to come out to Portland, not necessarily go through the motions, but they're going to take two games, and then it's going to be a sweep, and they're going to be the champions. And the thing I remember about the series is I think we lost in Philly, and it was a kind of a close game, the first one. The second one was 19 or something like that. But we came out to Portland and just killed them in two games, I think 20 and 30. And we never lost confidence in what we were doing. So going into the rest of the series, it's not like we were doubting ourselves. And a lot of that was from Jack Ramsey. I don't think I knew Jack for 30-some years. I never saw Jack doubt himself or have a doubting look on his face. So we fed a lot from Jack. So we went into the rest of the series very confident. And going into the last game, we knew we had the great fans behind us, and we knew it was going to be a tough game. And when it was over, I just remember the crowded court and then rushing into the locker room. But the thing I really remember is the parade. The parade was just an unbelievable experience.
David, I'm curious about the 76-77 season and how unique it was. You guys in the ABA kind of got dumped into the NBA in a dispersal draft, and it really did change the whole look of the league. How did you think your impact would be in the NBA after being an ABA guy? Did you think you would do as well as you did, or what were the expectations?
Dwight, I had no idea I would have the success that I had not only individually, but collectively as a team. I went from a team in the ABA that struggled to make payroll at the end of the year. And when we got paid, we'd go to the bank, deposit our check. We'd write a check for something else, electric bill, and it would bounce. So I went from a very unstable situation in Virginia to winning a championship my first year. And afterwards, I said, this is what the pros are supposed to be like. So my impact, I really had no expectations. I just wanted to go out. It was a new experience. I had never been to Portland before. I remember when I first came out after the ABA season ended, Stu Inman picked me up at the airport. He kind of took me around, Kathy did not come out with me, but I fell in love with the place. And I remember coming back after my visit with Stu, and Lenny Wilkins was the coach. Tom Mascheri was the assistant coach. Kathy said, "Well, David, what was it like?" I said, "Kathy, it's beautiful. You will absolutely love Oregon." So as far as the area, we came in with arms wide open and eyes wide open. And as far as a player, now, Dwight, I never really set goals for myself. I just figured as long as I work as hard as I possibly can, then just let the chips fall where they may.
And David, you joke about shooting layups, but really, it was a little more complicated than that. You were not a big man. You went in there in the days when centers were real centers, camped near the basket. You were the leader, in my mind, of guys shooting reverse layup after reverse layup. And you see them all the time. Now, Damian Lillard is very good with it. C.J. McCollum, very good. You're one of the best I've ever seen, and I know you put a ton of time in on that.
Yeah, I did, Dwight. I mean, I was 6'1". I was never the fastest guy. My vertical certainly was not very good. So I had to devise a way of protecting the ball when I shot it. And a lot of times I used the rim. When a big guy would come, if I'm driving on the right side, if a big guy would come to try to challenge the shot on the right side, I would try to take it to the left side and use the rim as protection. And yeah, whenever I started practice, I never started with 15-foot shots and shot jump shots or free throws. I always started underneath the basket. And I always used to spin the ball off the board, right hand and left hand. And that's kind of the way I played my entire career. That goes back to high school, certainly in college, and when I got to the pros.
Dave, I assume that how young that team was, most of you expected the titles to roll through over the ensuing years. So with a healthy Bill Walton, how many titles do you think Portland collects over the next few seasons?
Well, that's a great observation. You know, we were young and foolish and thought, boy, this could go on forever. I was one of the oldest guys. Herm Gilliam, I believe, was the oldest. Larry Steele might have been the second oldest. But I was 26, turning 27 the summer we won the championship. And we did. We thought we could go on forever, especially the way we started the next year. At one point, we were 50-10 the year after the championship. But you hear a lot of people say that it takes a lot of luck to win a championship. I don't think that necessarily means the bounce of the ball. A big part of luck is staying healthy. And when Bill was healthy, he was the best player in the league. There's no question about it. And had he stayed healthy, I know Jack, in conversations with him afterwards, after we left Portland, he thought we could have had a dynasty and won a couple more championships.
Well, Dave Twardzik, thank you so much for sharing your memories here on the 40th anniversary of the Blazers taking home the title. Appreciate your time here this evening.
Boy, it really is hard to believe it's 40 years. And it's funny. I got a call this morning. It was like my wife calling, wishing me a happy anniversary. Lloyd Neal called and said, "Hey," and it was a voicemail. I was in a doctor's appointment. Lloyd said, "David, just calling to wish a happy anniversary. It was our 40th anniversary today of winning the championship." So even talking about it today, I get goosebumps. And the farther removed from playing I get, I do believe I appreciate it a lot more.
Dave Twardzik, thank you so much. Still-
That'll do it for tonight's Talkin' Ball podcast. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or find it on the CSNW Twitter and Facebook pages after every show.